Dog Works Radio Network presents Mushing Radio, hosted by Robert Forto. Mushing Radio is about dog-powered sports, living in the Great White North, and mushing. Visit our website at mushingradio.com. Here is your host, Robert Forto.
Everybody, you are listening to Mushing Radio here on KVRF 89.7 in the Matsu Valley. RadioFreePalmer.org is our live streaming site. You can also find us over on Apple Podcasts. Just search for Dog Works Radio there. We're all over social media. Just search for the same name, Dog Works Radio. I'm on Twitter at Robert Forto. That's F-O-R-T-O. And my co-host, Alex Stein, who, come on, just a second, he is at Coldfoot Films. Alex, calling in from California, how are you?
I am doing great, Robert. Welcome back to the mushing capital of the world. I know you've been on quite an adventure, you and your lovely wife, Michelle, rocking and rolling all over the lower 48 for the past few weeks.
Yes, it is our annual tradition to hit up the theme parks and in the lower 48, as you mentioned, and we traveled down from Alaska to California to Colorado to the southeast in Atlanta. But you know what we did do, guys that are listening, is Alex and I got a chance to sit down and talk over dinner when we were down in L.A. And you know, Alex, you and I have been on this show, I think, for four, maybe 5 years now, and this was our first, and it was our first meeting of any type, meeting of the minds down there, where we got to sit down and talk over dinner about our show, wasn't it?
Right, and you know, we have a bunch of things that we're going to be starting relatively soon in a couple months that are going to be very exciting for this show. And it's some stuff that we're both personally really excited about. A few changes, but I think they're really good changes. And of course, we'll still be covering the race season and the Iditarod next year as well.
I'm looking forward to it, and I will be back down in the LA area with Alex in just a couple of weeks. We're going to attend a massive conference called Podcast Movement. It's the fourth annual conference of its kind, and there's going to be people talking about the ever-growing world of podcasts. I think that's the medium of the future. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, a lot of people have talked about how really people are moving more towards an online presence. Certainly there's room for radio in the mix, broadcast radio and terrestrial radio and satellite radio. But increasingly what we're seeing is a lot of these programs that initially go out over either broadcast or satellite radio also are available as podcasts. And there are tons of podcasts that are only podcasts that are not on the radio. We have, I think, a really unique niche in that we are the only mushing podcast and radio show. So we're very proud of our over-the-air broadcasting show, as well as the podcasts, which are available for you guys anytime you want them, and years and years of great shows going back, interviews with people, coverage of races. So I think we're both very excited to learn more about where the podcasting world is going, and to make a few tweaks that will let us build on the strengths that we already have with this show and take it to the next level.
Excellent. Well, I'm looking forward to hanging out with you for a few days and a couple of weeks. And we are going to do our next show. We're going to talk about another mushing legend, Dorothy Page. And we're going to record that live on location there at the podcast conference. Looking forward to that.
Yeah, and that'll be really fun. We were talking just before we started recording and realized that although we've talked about a lot of historical figures in the Iditarod, we have never, I believe, dealt in more than a passing way with Dorothy Page, who is, of course, known as the mother of the Iditarod.
Right. Well, let's just jump into it today. We're going to talk about Norman Vaughn. I tell you what, if there's any larger-than-life figure in not only mushing but in exploring world altogether, it's got to be the Colonel himself. Isn't that right?
Yeah, and, you know, Colonel Norman Vaughn is one of these people that when I think of quintessential Alaskans, I think of people like Norman Vaughn. And the odd thing is he was not originally from Alaska. He was, like a lot of people who make their way up to Alaska, he was born elsewhere. He was born in Salem, Massachusetts. And when he was growing up, that was in the heyday of the great explorers and people going for the poles, going for the North Pole and the South Pole. And there was a real mystique about these polar explorations and these attempts to get to the pole and then eventually successful trips to the pole. So he was born in Salem, Massachusetts, started going to Harvard University, dropped out in 1925 to go on a mission in Labrador, Newfoundland, to bring medical supplies to isolated villages by dog sled. So he did that and was really taken with the world of mushing, the world of dog sledding. Got to know all sorts of things about dogs, the treatment of dogs, how you motivate dogs, how you are as a musher. And then when that was done, he went back to Harvard. And then soon thereafter, he heard about Robert Byrd was having an Antarctic expedition. And he saw an article about this in the newspaper, and he pointed it out to his college roommate, and he said, "This is fantastic. I have to get onto this." And he applied to be part of this expedition as a dog musher. And by this point, this is 1928, the people had reached the South Pole, but what Byrd decided that he wanted to do was become the first person to fly over the South Pole. This was also really the beginning of the use of aviation as a means of exploration and really as a means of stretching the limits of where human beings could go. So he applied as a dog musher, was doing a lot of exploratory work, setting up the camp that Byrd used on Little America on the Ross Ice Shelf. He was the first or possibly the second person to mush dogs on the continent of Antarctica, and it was a really remarkable experience, and he wrote a book about it, which I believe was called "With Byrd at the Bottom of the World," and one of the things that he said was that Admiral Byrd really was committed to treating all of the men on his expedition extremely well. So there was, in some of the explorers at the time, there was a feeling that a lot of the people who were the crew members who were doing a lot of the work were being taken advantage of and were being, worked extremely long and extremely hard. And then the explorer whose name was on the expedition would sort of come in and get all of the glory. And Byrd was determined not to be that sort of person. And as a result, his men felt an extraordinary amount of loyalty to him. And he was so pleased with Norman Vaughn that he actually named a mountain on the Antarctic continent after him, Mount Vaughn. And when Vaughn found out that Byrd had named this mountain after him, he said, "Well, I am going to come back here someday and climb to the top of that mountain." And it was many, many, many years, many decades, actually, before he did that. But he did eventually come back and climb the mountain. But in the meantime, he came back to the U.S., He competed in the 1932 Winter Olympics in Lake Placid, where dog mushing was an exhibition sport. So he got to compete in the Olympics. And then World War II broke out. He enlisted, and he again was working with dogs in as a dog sled driver and doing search and rescue. Got promoted to the rank of colonel, which is why he's referred to almost universally as Colonel Norman Vaughn. And did many rescue missions in Greenland. He lobbied very hard to use dogs to carry supplies in the Battle of the Bulge, and eventually General Patton approved doing this. But by the time the dog, and he was training, working with dogs and training them over in Maine, by the time they actually got the dogs to France and to Europe, the snow had started melting, so they weren't used for that battle. But he made many, using dog teams, he had many successful rescues, people who crashed planes in the Alps and in Greenland, really just a kind of amazing figure, even if that's all that he had done. And then a few years after that, when the Korean War was going on, he rejoined the services and was participating and doing rescue work for the Air Force in the Korean War as well.
You know, reading through his bio, Alex, and listening to your stories, this was a guy that did not know how to slow down. Not only was he a student at Harvard and decided, you know what, I have something else planned for me. I'm going to quit this, you know, very prestigious university and go on missions and then, of course, go down to the South Pole. But this guy, he continued to go almost until his death, didn't he?
Yes. Very literally, he was planning a return trip to Mount Vaughan when he died at age 100. We'll get to that in a few minutes. By the time in 1967, he drove a snowmobile 5,000 miles from Alaska to Boston, Massachusetts. I'm not sure of the exact route, but I imagine it was through northern Canada and then down. But that is an extraordinary thing to contemplate now. Of course, it's with the climate changing, it's harder to contemplate doing it now. But the, you know, just doing that logistically, now we have satellite phones and we have all sorts of ways of keeping in touch. But even now, that's something that I would look at that and say in 2017 or 2018, that would be a huge adventure and somewhat risky. But he did it in 1967,
right,
when, you know, we didn't have all this communication infrastructure. We didn't have satellite phones that anyone could have, and we certainly didn't have snow machines that are as powerful and reliable as the snow machines we have now.
Right. Yeah, that's just amazing to me. You know, we thought just driving up here was a big feat, you know, just coming up from Denver to Alaska. I can only imagine how long it would take and all, like you said, all the logistics and all the effort that it would partake to do something like that over such a vast amount of wilderness. And you know, this guy, I tell you what, if he's not a hero's hero, I don't know who is. And let's talk a little bit about how he became sort of, you know, an adopted Alaskan. He came up here and immediately did what he does. He jumped right into it and ended up doing 13 Iditarods. Is that right?
Yeah. It's very interesting because he competed in 13 Iditarods. He only finished the race, I believe, four or five times. So there were a lot of times that he entered the Iditarod and for whatever reason was not able to complete the race. Now, the other thing that a lot of people might know about Colonel Norman Vaughn is he is very well known for his motto, which is dream big and dare to fail. And he was someone who always felt that you should constantly be challenging yourself. You should constantly be doing things that you think are perhaps too hard, things that you're not sure you're going to be able to do. And he's really someone who lived his life according to that motto. And, you know, for someone like me who has, you know, let's be honest, a fairly comfortable life, that is such an inspiration. And just looking at this guy and how he lived his life makes you think this is someone who, you know, obviously he's not immortal and he did eventually die, but this is someone who just lived every day of his life to its fullest. He moved up
and
to...
You know,
sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, Alex, he definitely played the beat of his own drum as well. I'm sitting here reading through his bio now where it talks about him crashing the presidential inauguration parade in 1977 with a dog team. Is that right?
Yeah. And he, you know, this was Jimmy Carter had been was elected in 76 and was being inaugurated. And Carter at the time was coming out of Watergate. In the Nixon years, Carter at the time was trying to be as open as possible and announced that he was going to have this inaugural parade that basically anybody could come to, which was a bit of a change from how inaugurations had been prior to that. And he just decided that he was going to come, and he loved mushing and he loved dogs, so he was going to come and bring a team of dogs and have the dogs in the sneak the dogs into the inaugural parade, which he then did, and that's a little bit of an amazing thing just to think about how you would do that. He was such a hit at doing that that he then was invited to the next two inaugurals to come and bring dogs and be part of it. So he was part of the inaugural parades in 81 and 85, Ronald Reagan's first and second terms. So, you know, this was a guy who had this idea of, I'm just going to go and do this because I think this is a great thing and I want more people to be exposed to it, and then just did it. And I think about a lot of us, in the modern world, we have ideas and then we think, oh, well, this is going to be really difficult, and we think of 1,000 reasons why we can't do it and let ourselves be distracted or be, you know, put off from doing these things. Someone like Norman Vaughn thinks of these things and says, okay, I'll do this. I'll get the dogs to Washington, D.C., and we'll just be part of the parade, which is what he did. And you know, that's a really inspirational thing for any of us who have thought of something we'd like to do and then talked ourselves out of it at any time.
You know, Alex, and then 60 some odd years later, after his trips to the South Pole, he starts up another mushing expedition, and it's called the Serum Run, a commemorative to the diphtheria run in 1925. And he did this for several years. Is that right?
Yeah. And, just going back a little bit to set that up, he came up to Alaska when he was 68. So this is in the mid 70s, 68, you know, we don't think of 68 being old now, but back in the 70s, 68 was the time when people were, you know, kicking back and taking it easy and really, if not in full retirement, sort of preparing to retire. But he came up there, jumped right into the Iditarod, started training for Iditarod, ran his first race in 75, didn't finish, ran in 76, didn't finish, ran again in 78, finished 33rd place with a finishing time of 22 days, 3 hours, 29 minutes, and 41 seconds. Now, you know, this is, we've talked about this a lot. This was back in the early days when people would take 3 or sometimes 4 weeks to finish Iditarod. And also that was back in the time, we still use the expression of people finishing in the money, although now pretty much I believe anyone who finishes gets $1,049 now, and I believe that's been the case for maybe 15 or 20 years. But back in the early days, you literally were not in the money if you were below a certain point. So his first three finishes in 78, 80, and 83, he didn't get any money whatsoever. So he had to pay to enter the race. He had to, you know, pay for all of the training and to get his dogs back and forth and for the food drops and all of that. And at the end of it, you know, got the belt buckle and glory, but absolutely no money. He then entered a bunch more times. His last finish was in 1990 when he was in 60th place. In 92, he ran the race again, but did not finish. Now by this point, he was in 92, he was, I believe, 84 years old. When he is that right? Yeah. When he ran his last Iditarod, and he was sort of one of the he boasted that he was both the oldest and the slowest person running the Iditarod, and we've talked a few times about the competitiveness rule and things like that, and there was really a feeling that he was. That he was taking so long that it was detracting from the race. So he was really actively discouraged from entering Iditarod after that. And that's part of the reason why he started the Serum Run Expedition, because he still wanted to do something that was big, because dream big, and he also wanted to do something that would really celebrate the use of dogs in Alaska, which by then was his adopted home. So he formed the Serum Run to basically retrace as an expedition the path that the 1925 Serum Run took from Nenana all the way to Nome.
Right. You know, Alex, we're just about out of time here. I want to make sure that we on sort of the last act of Norman Vaughn. Do you have that, or do you want me to say it about his drinking at age 100?
Yeah. Why don't you handle that? But before we get there, just briefly want to mention in 1994, when he was 88 years old, and you think about what most people do at age 88. When he was 88 years old, he went on an expedition back to Antarctica, climbed Mount Vaughn with his wife, who, by the way, he was 88, his wife was 52, and they climbed and summited Mount Vaughn. There was a National Geographic film crew that went along with it, and there was a special made about this that was very popular at the time. But go ahead and jump into to his 100th birthday.
Well, I know you did quite a bit of research on this, Alex, but I have a question for you. Maybe you know, if you don't, maybe some of our listeners do. But aside from the military, do you know how Norman Vaughn supported himself? Was he a business owner? How did he make a living? Do you know?
You know, I'm not sure, but I do know that when he moved up to Alaska, he had been divorced from either his second or third wife and had just declared bankruptcy. So, you know, again, this is, and I imagine that like a lot of people in Alaska, he had done a number of different things over the years, but I will find out, or if any of our listeners know, you know, let us know, and we'll report back about that.
So we had said, Alex, that this guy sort of, you know, played at the beat of his own drum. He did things to the fullest. He chased after every dream that he ever had. And one thing that he stayed true to was he promised his mother he was not going to drink until he was at the age 100. And then on December 18th, 2005, on his 100th birthday, he had his first drink of alcohol, and then unfortunately he passed away just a few days later up here in Alaska. But he did exactly what he said he was going to do. He stayed true to his word, and he went out on his own terms, didn't he?
He really did. And at his 100th birthday party, it was at one of the big hotels in Anchorage, and there were over 100 people there, and they had a champagne toast, which was his first drink of alcohol ever in his life. I want to mention briefly before we run out of time, in addition to the With Bird at the Bottom of the World book, he also wrote a book called My Life of Adventure, published in 1995. And he was planning to return to Mount Vaughan when he was 100 years old, and actually appeared on The Tonight Show earlier in 2005 to publicize this trip and to start raising money for it. Unfortunately, he died before that could happen, but he was determined, you know, if he could, that he was going to return and summit this 10,000-foot mountain in Antarctica to celebrate his 100th birthday.
Great stuff for sure. You know, Alex, people ask me all the time if and when I'm going to ever run Iditarod, and I always think back to stories like Norman Vaughn. If this guy can start in his mid-60s, I still have 20 years or so to go before I need to start feeling the pressure and get on the back of those runners and run to Nome. He is truly an inspiration to me, and I would bet just about anybody else that is not only interested in dog sledding, but, you know, the outdoors, exploring in general, just getting out there and living life to the fullest. This guy did everything he wanted to do his entire life, from the moment he was born till the day he died, wasn't he?
Yeah, and really, we talk a lot about different reasons why people run races, long-distance races like Iditarod or the Yukon Quest. And for some people, it's really about the competition, and it's about trying to win, or at least trying to improve themselves. But Norman Vaughn, I think, really, really personifies the other range of it, which is he's doing this for the experience and for the challenge, and it's a very personal thing. And that is also very inspiring to me as someone who, you know, is, let's face it, never going to win the Iditarod. But still, looking at someone like this who says, I'm going to move to Alaska at age 68, start running this 1,000-plus-mile race, and do it on my terms and finish, that's pretty wonderful.
It is. Great stuff, Alex. I really appreciate it. Looking forward to meeting up with you again in a couple of weeks when we talk about Dorothy Page, live from the Podcast Movement Conference in Anaheim, California. Alex, we'll see you guys next time, okay?
All right. Thanks, Robert.
Thank you. On behalf of my co-host, Alex Stein, this is Robert Forto for Mushing Radio. Talk to you guys next time. Goodbye.